Hey, Nerd Funnelers, we're back. You're listening to Nerd Funnel, where we take all the nerd news of the world and funnel it into your more than willing ear holes. I'm Bob Shue, and with me tonight is Fong.
What's up?
And we are here to talk about some Nintendo. We both love Nintendo.
I know, I do.
Old and new.
It's funny, because like, before I was going to PSX, and we weren't cosplaying the first day, I was like, oh, I'll throw on a PlayStation shirt, and then I realized, oh God, I have no PlayStation shirts. I only have Nintendo and Marvel. And I was like, fuck.
Well, yeah, to be honest, like, I mean, a lot of PlayStation's intellectual properties, like their stuff, like they're kind of few and far between, and they're not like, they're just not as iconic and as recognizable as a lot of Nintendo stuff.
Well,
I mean, on Earth knows Mario. I mean, like, you posted that thing the other day, that beautiful thing where Shigeru Miyamoto was playing with the Roots.
Yeah, Shigeru Miyamoto was playing the fucking Super Mario theme song with the Roots on Jimmy Fallon.
That is the most beautiful thing.
And he's pretty good at guitar, surprisingly.
Well, he's an amazing musician, honestly.
I did not know that.
Yeah, he worked really well with Koji Kondo and was it Tetsuo Ueda, I think, for composing a lot of the original the chiptunes for the original Nintendo games, like Metroid and
That's cool.
Mario and Zelda. I mean, it wasn't exclusively Miyamoto, but he
right, he
signed off on a lot of what that, you know, that original sound style felt like.
Yeah. I just, for me, I when I think Nintendo, I think nostalgia. You know, I think Super Mario, and I loved Super Mario, even though I didn't really get to play because it was on my cousin's console, and he'd be like, fuck you. I don't want you to fuck up my save.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that spawns a very interesting question in my mind right now.
Uh-huh.
You said, like, when you think Nintendo, you think nostalgia. Do you think that hurts them or helps them as a company because they're trying to move forward? And they, you know, they're known for Mario and Zelda, and they're like, they have a hard time getting traction with new stuff like Splatoon. Like, how iconic is Splatoon? Like, it's their own IP stuff, right?
Right.
And it's a fun game.
Yeah.
But the characters are not standouts, or, you know, it's like they're relying on Link and Zelda, Mario, Samus, and Star Fox to get them through the rest of time, and they can't really do that forever.
Well, honestly, I think it does help them in the sense of, first of all, when you think Nintendo, you think your fucking childhood.
Yeah.
And secondly, because you have that association with that company, in my mind, at least for me, I am more willing to check out some of the current stuff that they're doing because look at all the amazing stuff they've done before.
That's true. But then keep in mind, though, like, as we were discussing earlier today in the evening, we are of a certain age.
Yeah.
And case in point, my nephew was born in 2001. So his childhood is like, we have Nintendo, we think childhood, but that is not the case for like people that are born way later than us now. It's like when they think their childhood, like my nephew thinks like Ratchet and Clank and like there's Banjo-Kazooie.
That's very true.
And there's a lot of other competitive anchor points for nostalgia to root now.
Right, there is, but they still have like this massive demographic in the millennials.
They still got the monopoly on the millennials.
Yeah, so I mean, I honestly don't think it hurts them. And then the Switch just came out, so I feel like people are like, the reception has been pretty good for that.
Yeah, the gameplay trailers and everything for it's come out. I think we don't actually get our hands on it until next year. And
right.
In March, I think, 2017.
Is it March? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, Nintendo's always just done a really good job of balancing the nostalgia of the characters and the feel with the progressiveness of gameplay. So like the Wii.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they took Mario and Zelda, but then they put in like, oh, now you can like do motion controls. I mean, and they were the first on board to do that. So it's a nice balance. But I mean, I don't understand. I want to understand that, like, from your perspective, like what it is about these characters. Like, I mean, is it just because the coziness of childhood will never make a bad Mario game come out?
I feel like with something like Mario, I mean, this was when video games like first came out.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like they did have the edge in that they were the first ones to put that shit out there.
Yeah.
But also like because they were the first ones, they got to do weird ass shit like look at this plumber run through a mushroom kingdom.
I know, seriously.
Chasing a princess. That's not creepy. But also like that's That's so fucking iconic because it was so unique and so weird. And it was so weird because of the limited technology they had at the time. I mean, the reason why Mario and Luigi have mustaches is because they couldn't, like, program mouths onto the sprites.
Yeah.
So they had to hide it with mustaches.
That's awesome. I've heard that fact. And I'm always of the opinion that when you have these constraints, like these challenges to overcome as far as like technical challenges, breeds creativity and character and narrative design.
Oh, absolutely.
You have to think your way around it. Now you have these huge AAA titles where they have, you know, tens and tens of millions of dollars to just throw at whatever they want to.
Right.
And they have, you know, the most powerful computers in the world working on rendering these graphics and doing the design.
Yeah.
And they come up with these games, but a lot of times, like, the characters are shit. And the plot lines are flimsy, and it's just like, well, now we can do whatever we want. So they put everything into making it look pretty, and like, it looks pretty.
But I do think, like, that's why as well we're seeing a surge in, like, interest in indie companies. Mm-hmm. Because they are putting the effort into, like, character development and stuff. They are working with a limited budget that they then have to work out.
Yeah.
Like, there's an indie title that I've been looking forward to. It's in beta testing hell right now, but it was on Kickstarter, and it's called We Happy Few.
We Happy Few.
Yeah, and it's in this, like, utopian environment in London.
Mm-hmm.
It takes place around the 60s. It's very BioShock feeling.
Okay.
Where everyone is drugged up to be happy, and you have to navigate your way out of this place without getting caught. Because if you get caught not taking your medication, like, they fucking murder you.
Whoa, that sounds like Equilibrium. That sounds awesome.
It looks amazing.
Is it like a kind of a realistic design, or is it kind of cartoony, or is it surreal?
It is. I would say it's surreal. Like, like, it does kind of look like BioShock, where, like, you can, it's a very humanistic face, but, like, not 100% so. Like, oh, that's the other thing. Everyone's in clown makeup because everyone has to be happy. Oh,
okay. Now I can't play this game. for all you listeners, please see our previous episode, our previous podcast on fear, anxiety, and clowns for my full take on clowns.
Everyone, but send Bobby your pictures of clowns.
Please don't. if you want the cast and LPs to keep going because I'll be able to sleep, please don't. Clowns terrify me. Now I was really wanting to play this game until.
Well, okay, it's sort of clown. I'll show you what it looks like, but it's like they have smiles painted on them because no one is allowed to be fucking sad in this city.
That's terrifying.
It's such a cool concept, and it's been several years now before they've actually released it. I think there was beta and alpha testing, but it got into my spam folder, so I haven't been able to play it at all. Mm-hmm. But I'm very excited about it.
Okay.
And I love that there is stuff like that coming out more and more. And, you know, I do think, like, Nintendo, I love their nostalgia titles like Zelda and stuff. I never really got to play Zelda as a kid because my cousin didn't have Zelda for some reason.
I still have to get an emulator that will display that on the computer. I don't know why I'm having emulator problems with Zelda, but we are going to get you to play that.
That's fine. I'm wearing rupee earrings right now, and I feel like a poser, but I love, like, 8-bit art. I love 8-bit video game art. So I do own, like, a lot of jewelry, a lot of art centered around it.
8-bit art, and, like, the pixel lends itself to so many means of artistic expression. Like,
yeah, exactly.
My friend makes those those little iron beads.
Yeah.
The iron on beads. There's the cross stitching. Another friend of mine.
That's cool.
Kamiya from Nerd Funnel version 1.0. she does cross stitching. I have this beautiful Legend of Zelda.
Oh, really?
A bookmark she made for me from cross stitching.
That's so cool.
With the 8-bit Link and the Triforce.
That's badass.
Says power, wisdom, courage, and she, like, even burnt the edges so it looks like an old, like, old piece of torn out lore from, like, a long, long ago.
Wow, that sounds like it took a lot of work.
Yeah, well, you know, she and I we go way back.
My friends suck. They don't make me shit.
I feel bad. I have not made her anything. But
that's not true. You got me Uncharted 4. I was very happy about that.
Nathan Drake, baby.
Yeah, he's my waifu.
I'm sorry, I cannot cross stitch Nathan Drake for you. I would if I could. It would look terrible. You know what I could do though? Is I could ask Kamiya to teach me how to do the cross stitching, and then I could do like an 8-bit Nathan Drake for you.
Aw, that would be adorable. I would love that. 8-bit, like, he's already, well, I mean, I can't really sexualize, like, a little 8-bit sprite.
Speak for yourself, girl. Oh, I'm going to tear that pixel apart. Oh, my God.
But, I mean, Nintendo's always going to have the, you know, nostalgia thing on their end. Well,
what would you think, since you brought up, and you raised a good point about indie developers and indie gaming.
Yeah.
Nintendo either does their own in-house, like, first person, like, this is our property shit.
Right.
Or they'll license it out to somebody else, but it's still their property.
Right, yes.
And then they'll have third-party developers, right?
Yeah.
But wouldn't it be cool, and if you could, like, if there could be some sort of way that Nintendo could license their, hold like auditions for content, right? So like, uh-huh. It's like, okay, we have Metroid, all
right? Right.
So, okay, if you're an indie developer, if your company is small and up and coming, we'll have a special program,
yeah,
where we'll give you the rights to make a full-fledged game with our characters, and, you know, you submit the alpha,
yeah,
and we'll put the alpha up, and then we'll figure out if we like it or not, and then we'll pick a few of the alphas. And then we'll give the alphas back to you, and then we'll get it into beta, and then Nintendo could release it like on beta, and then we could all vote on which one we like the best to continue.
That would be cool.
Wouldn't that be awesome? Wouldn't it be something like that?
But I feel like that's not going to happen, mainly because like the gaming industry right now is just like, this is exclusive. No. Yeah. And like the best you can do is beta test.
Yeah. There will be too many hands in the pot for Nintendo. I think they're more.
Yeah. Like everyone's very secretive about their stuff, 'cause the gaming industry is so huge now. I mean, look at the voice actor strike in the gaming industry. Yeah. Like, we were kind of surprised that Claudia Black was there, to promote Uncharted. Claudia Black and the, what is her? There's a new character in Uncharted 4, and I forgot her name. But she was there as well. And, you know, for people that don't know, the voice actors strike came about because they felt they weren't being fairly compensated. Like, you have actors in, like, summer blockbusters like Robert Downey Jr. and stuff, and they're getting paid millions of dollars because their movie made millions of dollars. And that's not what's happening in the gaming industry.
Yep.
In the gaming industry, you have a flat fee. So if, like, I think a great example is, I think it was Fallout 4 or something, there was this guy who was just handed a script and was told, these are your fucking lines.
Yeah.
And he had no idea he was the main character. He just went in, read them cold, went out, got paid like $300 an hour to do so. And he didn't see that reflected in his paycheck, the success of the game.
Oh.
Like, and that's bullshit.
That's heartbreaking.
And on top of that, there are certain things that you do in voice acting that can like really fuck up your voice. Mm-hmm. So they,
oh, like what's his name? Sean, the guy that does Goku's voice.
Oh yeah,
like or Vegeta, like where they just have to sit there and scream in the booth for like 20
minutes.
Yeah,
exactly. So you have shit like that going on for like video games.
Yeah, who's covering their medical expenses?
And so occasionally, like it. So also as well, like, getting shot in the heart and getting shot in the gut, mm-hmm. the voice actor, one, has to know what that sounds like and change their voice accordingly. Two, the other thing is that there isn't really like a sliding scale compensation for that. What voice actors in the video gaming industry are asking for right now is that if something is particularly hard on their voice, they want to be paid like slightly more.
Yeah, and that's
because,
fair.
Yeah, because they might not be able to work for 3 months after that because they have to rest their voice. Because if you don't rest your voice and you do stuff that's like really hard on your throat and your diaphragm, that can cause vocal nodes to appear.
Yeah.
And you'll have to get surgery. And then you won't be able to say anything. Like, you can't even fucking whisper. Say nothing for a year to recover.
And then there's your job. Like, where's your
exactly.
career? But yeah, I mean, if you see them in the recording booth, like you see videos of them, their job is very physical. Like,
yes.
They get into it. Like, they have to physically feel the injury, the attack, you know, right. whatever they have to do. And in a lot of cases too, the people they get will do the motion capture as well.
Yeah.
This crossover with that.
Nate, fucking Nolan North does the motion capture.
Exactly.
For Uncharted.
So it's like, well, Andy Serkis is making God knows how many dollars per movie doing his motion capture and voice.
Oh yeah.
Jesus so like, Christ. Why not any of the, you know, why not Billy West? Why not John DiMaggio? Why yeah. not Fred Tascatori?
And the problem is also, video game voice acting contracts, they're going off of a standard contract, mm-hmm. but this was made like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not very up to date. Like before, not as many people bought video games. Now they're making as much as summer blockbuster movies.
Oh, totally.
So it's not really fair. Sorry, I'm like a voice actor. So this was, so I went off on this tangent because it's a very important issue for me.
Well, no, that's totally, I mean, it's very important. Very important to recognize that and support voice actor causes.
Yeah.
Do you know which companies are better treat their voice actors better? Like, would you say like Nintendo Ooh. Treats their companies or their voice actors better than like Bethesda or EA or
I have
Blizzard?
No idea, to be honest.
Like, I mean, I wonder if the Voice Actors Guild has a list of like, okay, well, who's the most fair compensators? Like,
yeah.
you know, who treats their?
I should hope so.
Yeah. And I wonder what the difference is between like. The, you know, voice actors that do the Japanese versions of the games and then the American versions of the games and then like when it's they do the international versions of the games where they yeah. switch the languages, like
right
do though I wonder if those pay scales and those the kind of laws and rules that govern how voice actors are treated kind of differ over international lines.
Yeah, I mean, it's a whole different country, so yeah. you figure there's gonna be like a significant change.
Yeah. Well, as far as Nintendo goes, yeah. For a long time, I mean, thinking about it, honestly, I mean...
They didn't really have voice actors because everything was sound effects.
Well, there's sound effects, but think about it. Most of the major players of major characters in Nintendo intellectual properties, like their own property,
yeah.
are silent.
Yeah, that's very true.
I mean, Mario has like never said anything until 64, and Yellow was like, woohoo, yahoo.
Yeah.
And then Link is like, hot, hot. And then Samus has never said anything until Metroid Other M.
Right.
And then that was a terrible game.
Yeah. But I think that was just because the technology wasn't there.
That's true. Star Fox actually had I think Star Fox had the first Nintendo character
to say
voice
words.
It was like it was just like little blobbles like that,
yeah.
in the Star Fox game. No, in the end of the game, when you beat the game, you could hear him. And when it was on cartridge, which I thought was amazing as a kid playing, because I never heard Mario talk to me or Link talk to me, but
yeah.
In Star Fox, you know, right, besides yelling, that Link, at least in the SNES era, I mean,
yeah.
In the end, he speaks to you as you're flying home.
Oh.
He's like, mission accomplished. We're going home. And it's like, I mean, it's very crappy and rudimentary.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was like, oh, wow, voice on SNES cartridge.
Right.
Which, okay, I don't know, this is a weird tangent, but like speaking of cartridges,
yeah.
the Switch is going to have a cartridge. We're going back.
That's so crazy.
Isn't that weird to think about?
Like not even a digital copy, because that's what I would have thought.
No, but I like that. I like having an artifact. Like
that's very true.
Nintendo was always very good at giving you when you paid for something from Nintendo,
yeah.
you got something.
Right.
Like, there was a thing. Like you
like
got
you
an
could
artifact.
Hold it in your hand.
Yeah, you got the game, but then it was also had like a manual with it, with like an actual
yeah.
thing in it. And now that's what I feel, it's like a loss of a lot of games, especially, you know, digital downloads. Like, you know, a lot of our LPs we do on Steam or on Origin or computers and stuff like that. And there's, you buy the game,
yeah.
and then the whole tutorial and all the lore, it's in game. But like, when you've got when you have a game where you bought the cartridge or the disc,
right,
and you got like a pamphlet and you got like a little character breakdown, a little backstory,
yeah,
there was an artistry to it. I'm wondering if with Switch, since they do the cartridge base, if that's going to make a comeback.
Yeah, I mean, and again, that goes with the nostalgia thing. Like, yeah. I love the look of cartridges. Like, I would love to just like have a wall of them just like attached onto my wall as wallpaper.
Some of those cartridges are worth a lot of money now.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I've noticed.
And the boxes too, the box art.
Yeah. I think Kirby's Dream Land is like $50 for the cartridge.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's another lost art. Speaking of which, is box art. Nintendo had a lot of box art.
Yeah, they did.
And there's a lot of people online now that are doing kind of videos on like, you know, what do you call it? When you curating like a museum,
yeah,
like video curations of box art, and a lot of it's from Nintendo because Nintendo for a long time had the best box art.
Yeah.
Because they had the biggest library of games, and like the original Nintendo games just had like those kind of pixelated, like, do you ever play like Excitebike or Track and Field or you ever see those?
Maybe.
Or Rad Racer or anything like that where...
Possibly Track and Field, but I don't 100% remember.
But it was just like big blown up pixelated images of the actual sprites.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know how Super Mario, like it was just... Remember the original box art for the box Super Mario was just big... Fire flowered up Super Mario.
Yeah, totally.
Pixels, right? But then, like, you had Mario Brothers 2. Did you ever play Super Mario Brothers 2?
Yes.
And that was, like, more artistry to it.
Yeah. They had faces.
Yeah, exactly. And Nintendo was the one that kind of pioneered art and, I think, video games together as far as, like, putting out there for the public to see. Because in Nintendo Power, remember the Nintendo Power magazine?
Yeah, I didn't have it, but yes, I remember it.
You've seen it around. They would sell in the stores. They had comics. They had
right. They had
Legend of Zelda comic. They had a Mario
Super Mario
comics. Yeah.
Apparently, Peach was super awesome in those. Like, she was very strong.
Oh, she was a badass. She did not take shit.
Yeah. Also, they had a contest that they ran for if whoever wrote in or whatever and won, they won a guest role on The Mask 2 when The Mask was a huge thing
back in the early 90s when The Mask was
So this is what happened, though. As you all know, like, it didn't come out for like 10 20 years later or whatever it was, and the reason for that was, I guess, like, Jim Carrey dropped out of it. So the prize winner was then contacted by the film studio and said, look, what we can do is, like, We can have you wait until, like, we're able to get someone else to do The Mask 2 and all of that shit comes together. Or you can get, like, the crew jacket that you would have worn on the set plus $5,000.
Whoa.
And this is being posed with a 13-year-old kid. And I do believe he ended up going with the money.
Oh, of course. That's like $5,000 to a 13-year-old is like infinite money.
Yeah. And then, of course, we all know how that panned out with Son of the Mask and how fucking awful that was.
I never watched it because it looked too awful to put...
I never watched it either, but it looked awful. Jamie Kennedy was in it. It had none of the charm of the first movie. I actually really liked that movie.
Well, the first mask.
Oh,
yeah, it was great.
Like, it was just like, I think it came from the same director of Cats and Dogs or something like that. So it was more geared towards children, mm-hmm. and it had none of the elements of the first movie.
Yeah, I mean, the first movie had a lot wider appeal.
Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, it was cartoony, but it was... It was like one of the first adult cartoons.
Yeah, so that was a contest that Nintendo Power did.
Well, they did a lot of that kind of thing. Like they had a contest for, I think it was, someone got put into The Legend of Zelda: Link to the Past.
Oh, really?
In like a secret room.
That's cool.
And I think they won the contest and they put it in, and nobody found the room for like 10 years.
Oh, geez.
It requires like a speed run, and nobody was speed running anything back then.
Right. Yeah.
You know, people had hard enough time getting it through the first time because it was so hard. But like, they had to do like a speed run. You have to get to a certain point in the game and then run from one place to another in a certain amount of time and a certain amount of speed.
Yeah.
And then there'll be a secret entrance in this like one tree, just like one random tree. And you fall down in this tree. It's like a secret hole in the tree. And then there's like a room full of rupees, and the room talks to you. And it's like, hey, I'm so and so, the contest winner. If you got here, you found my secret room.
That's so cool.
Here's 200 rupees. And it's like,
oh, you actually did get something out of it.
You got money.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but like, nobody found it for like 10, 12 years after the game came out, and until like the early
2000s. Do you think that person was just like super pissed? Like, I was fucking contest winner of this game. No one even fucking found the room. Fuck you guys.
Well, I don't think they told them how, I don't think they told the contest winner how to get to the room either.
Oh, wow, really?
So I don't think, I mean, because if they had, then people would have known about it.
Right.
After 12 years, but I don't think anybody knew.
Well, yeah, but do you think they were pissed because no one found it?
I guess so. I guess I kind of would have been. But I mean, Nintendo was intricately involved with its its consumer base back then.
It really was,
yeah. In innovative ways, you know, making comics, and they had the magazine, and with a lot of hand-drawn maps, and and of course the comics and the Nintendo Power, and then doing contests like that. But I mean, there's nothing like that in like these big budget studios now. I mean, I don't know, like there's contests to like win games and stuff, but
I think,
as far as
like the audience is just too huge now.
Yeah.
I think is the problem, because you did have a lot of people into video games at the time, but not nearly as much as today.
Yeah.
Like today it's insane. I mean, you know, Comic-Con used to be like a low-key con, and then now like nerd culture exploded, and you got to camp out for like a week just to get to Hall H.
Like, seriously, goddamn, Hall H is no fun anymore.
I have never been in fucking Hall H.
Hall H is amazing, but it's just, it's too much work. It's too much work to get in there now.
Exactly.
I just can't. Maybe I'm just old.
No, maybe I'm old too. I feel bad because, like, I just don't have the energy to
Do that anymore.
To do anything. I don't even have the energy to, like, go wait, like, an hour, maybe an hour and a half to see Ninja Sex Party.
It's tough.
Because I've met them so many times now that I'm just like, Brian, this, I'm not doing it. I'll fucking see you later.
I'll see you at Story Collider.
Yeah, and he'll be like, okay.
Where there's no wait in 20 people.
Yeah.
Speaking of Hall H, you're wearing a Captain Hammer
shirt. I am wearing a Captain Hammer shirt.
1 year I was there, Nathan Fillion, I was in line for Hall H super early in the morning.
Yeah.
And Nathan Fillion was doing a panel in there later in the day.
Oh, cool.
And he came through like butt ass early in the morning in the cold dark and brought people food.
Aww.
They were standing in line.
That sounds like something nice he'd do.
That's
speaking of butts, I accidentally grabbed his ass once. We've talked about that before.
One glorious moment in history.
Yeah, well, I mean, okay, like, it sounds like bullshit when I say it, because it sounds like you just wanted to grab his ass. Like, no, I was, like, super starstruck,
yeah.
And he put his arm around me to take a photo. His face was also, like, up against mine, so I actually know what his stubble feels like against my face, and that's kind of something I never thought
I'd
say.
Not many ladies can say that, right?
And he put his arm around me, and I was like, oh, well, I don't want to be, like, you know, all awkward and stuff. Like, let's make this friendly. And I tried to put an arm around his shoulder, but he's fucking huge. Like, even crouching down, like, I still couldn't reach around his shoulder. So I was like, you know what? I'm gonna aim for small of back. I did not hit small of back,
but
I was too, like, well, to be starstruck to notice.
To be fair, he's really tall, and you are not.
Yes.
So the targeting was mismatched.
Yeah, and like, he didn't say anything. His security didn't say anything. I'm used to Ryan being on my right, yeah. And I was like, I should give this butt a squeeze. Wait, something is instinctually telling me not to. And I look to my left and Ryan's there, and I'm like, if Ryan's here, then that means, oh God, what have I done? How do I fix this? Probably not have my hand on his butt anymore.
Yeah,
that's,
good idea.
That's the first step.
I had an awkward Nintendo-related...
Oh, yeah?
Well, I don't know. We're speaking of kind of awkward... Well, not awkward, but I actually lost my virginity to Super Mario Brothers music. this was in high school.
Okay.
And I was dating this girl, and
yeah,
her sister was my age, and she was a little younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
And we were all friends, and we had a big common friend group, and so people were over hanging out and doing stuff. And the girl I was dating decided that it was time.
Okay.
And so we go in a room. And so she's got, you know, things like laid out nicely, but it was a kind of a small place.
Was she dressed as Princess Peach or something? To just
I wish, no.
Hammering in more of the Nintendo theme?
No, unfortunately not. So this is back in the day before, like, you were playing music off your computers, and she had like a little battery-powered tape deck, and she had made a mixtape of Prince.
Okay.
So we had Prince going, which is, you know, of course.
Yeah, Prince is sexy
as
fuck.
If you're going to lose the virginity, the Prince is the way to do it, right?
Yeah, half his songs are about vaginas.
Exactly, right? So I'm here, I'm thinking, I'm feeling the groove with Prince, right? But the tape deck runs out of power halfway through Erotic City.
Oh, lame. That's
and
a great
we're,
song.
We're only like to second, third base.
Yeah.
And so, and then like, we don't want to stop, right?
Right.
But so then the tape player goes off, and then all my friends and her sister are in one room over.
Oh, no.
And they're all playing Mario. And since there's a lot of them, the volume is really loud.
Yeah.
So, da-da-da-da-da-da, boom, Bobby gets his groove on. Da-da-da-da-da-da, So that's my...
Do you just, like, get a full-on erection now every time you hear Super Mario music?
I'm going to just say that most of the times when I play the original Super Mario Brothers, it's alone and lotion is nearby. No, it's just, it's one of those weird things. It's like, for now, forever in my mind. Like, I mean, I have a lot of different connections, like you said earlier, with nostalgia for childhood.
Yeah.
But honestly, Super Mario was like the gateway to my adulthood. On it, like, weird connotation there.
Yeah, yeah.
But then also, like, it's weird how you take those... I have to say Nintendo was responsible for more pleasant mental connections with memories of my life than any other type of entertainment.
Yeah.
Like Final Fantasy, Secret of Mana, like a lot of the RPGs that I was really connected to or connected to certain places in time.
Uh-huh.
The DuckTales video game.
Oh, yeah.
Castlevania.
Yeah.
Like a lot of
I fucking hate Castlevania.
Game is hard.
Because I tried to play it at Survive the Night.
Survive the Night? That game
over
is hard.
GamerCon, and it sucked. And I was like, oh, I've never played Castlevania before. How come the last person who played this only made it to level 2? And then I found out why.
Okay, that was Super Castlevania 4. That was a little later on.
Okay.
They're still hard, though. Like, the original was fucking ridiculous.
Oh, yeah?
It's okay. Really hard. Great music, though.
Yeah?
Castlevania series got great music.
It does have awesome music.
Yeah.
Now that I think about it.
So we got Nintendo Switch coming out next year. They just had released that little old Nintendo console, but it's a USB drive that has like 30
yes, yes,
games.
I did, yeah.
And it has all these games that we've just been talking about, all these old games. They know there's a market for it.
Yeah, they,
so there's like, hey, let's just re-release the old Nintendo, but instead of like, you know, the old cartridge guts, let's just put a USB drive in there with all the old games on it. And we'll sell it for $70 and make a gajillion dollars.
Yeah,
and lo and behold.
Yeah, every place was sold out.
Everybody fucking bought it.
Yeah.
That's great.
Like, I thought no one was going to buy it because emulators, so why would you?
Yeah.
But everyone loves the nostalgia.
We should, you know, I should just fucking eat it and buy one so we have that to put on, since I have such a hard time with the emulators and everything. Well, I'll just hook it up to the screen.
Yeah, and if you need like extra, I'll go halvesies with,
like,
you on that.
I mean, that'd be so much fun because there's like 30 games, and I guess you can download more.
Yeah, it's like it's $70, so it's like 35 per person. I don't give a fuck.
That's awesome. And there's so many, like, I think there was more risk taking back then too. Like you were saying earlier, how, like, you know, oh, dude with a mustache and like jumping through mushrooms, like it's crazy, right? But
yeah,
it worked. Like, there was more risk taking back then. There was a lot of like, oh, well.
Yeah, because video games weren't a thing yet. So they were like, fuck it. Literally, let's do anything.
Yeah, because like, and you know, they had constraints. So they had to be like, think outside the box and do this crazy shit to kind of make things work. Whereas now it's like, well, okay, now we have a budget of $10 million. So we can't do anything too crazy because we need to make sure we make our investment back. The initial $10 million plus, you know, they made all these financial considerations. Whereas like Square Enix back in the day when they made the first Final Fantasy, everything they'd done before has failed.
Right.
They tried to do like dungeon crawlers and stuff, like the old, like, you know, click and you advance one screen.
Yeah,
and it's options, you know, like that. It's like, they're like,
oh, they did point and click adventures?
Yeah. And they're just like, this isn't working. Like, fuck it. Let's just try something new. And they tried something completely new and they made the sprites and they made the menu screen, and they're like, okay, well, this is probably it. This is probably it for us. So
I mean, it's literally called Final Fantasy.
Yeah, it's literally Final Fantasy, and it was the Hail Mary that made the franchise. And
that's
so
true.
Like, you had people like, do you ever, there was a game called Boy and His Blob. One of my favorite games.
I've heard of it.
It's the most ridiculous premise you could possibly think of. It's a boy who feeds this space alien blob jelly beans, different flavors, to change them in different shapes, to just get around town, fight centipedes, eventually fly to Blobalonia, and reunite him with his family. Like, who thinks of that shit? Like, if you pitch that now to like a AAA,
right?
Like, you know, like Blizzard or Bethesda, if they were making a title, they would never go for that. But it was one of the best selling games on the original Nintendo, and it got re-released on Virtual Console. It got a sequel later on. Like, it's got its own fan fiction and like comic.
Wait, it has its own fan
fiction? Yeah, it's ridiculous how it's got this really, really awesome cult following. And I guess I'm part of it because I know all this. But I just realized that now. I'm a boy in his blobber. That sounds wrong.
Well, I mean, but because of that, because the AAA companies are like, fuck you, we do see those risks taken with the indie companies.
Yeah, and that's where their strengths lie.
Like, who thought Plants vs. Zombies was going to be huge?
No, nobody.
Like, that's such a crazy-ass premise.
Yep. Seriously. Or even like, even something as simple and as awesome as Minecraft.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, okay, everybody's going forward with graphics. Let's not. Let's make pixelated blocks and stack them. And then, but they tapped into like, oh, wait, everybody likes building shit like Legos and stuff.
Everybody likes 8-bit art.
So let's just give them, yeah. So let's just give them an infinite space and digital infinite space to do whatever, build whatever they want.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, wait, that's a $1 million idea. And nobody saw it until it's like, oh, shit, Minecraft just blew up.
Yes. From the maker of Cliff Horse. If no one knows what Cliff Horse is.
Cliff Horse. Is that anything like Goat Simulator?
Sort of. It's also from Notch.
Okay.
And all it is, I think it was just something he was like testing for another game. But it's just you as a horse, you go up to the highest point of a cliff. And then you just run down.
That's awesome.
And like the graphics keep up with everything and stuff.
Yep.
And
simple cells though, right?
Yeah.
So what do you think Nintendo, like we've been glorifying Nintendo. I mean, yeah. they have had some missteps though.
Yeah.
I mean, one could argue that their latest incarnation of Wii U was not terribly successful.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Wii U.
I never got one. They tried to give it the tablet thing, and it just didn't work.
Yeah.
I think it was kind of like a stumbling step until we get to what's next, which is the Switch, which looks like a more completed, well-thought-out idea,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to Wii U, which is like, oh, let's just take the Wii, but like we'll make
it crappier.
We'll give it a tablet, too.
Yeah.
It's like, no. And it wasn't even like a good tablet, like, you know, like I was going to say Samsung, but we know those kind of batteries explode now. like a Surface or something like that.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Something awesome like that. And then, you know, one can say, although the GameCube had a great library, technologically speaking, it was like kind of a half step between the cartridge and then the Wii, which was the revolutionary one. So they kind of like take a half step and then a full step, half step, full step, half step, full step.
Okay.
I kind of see. I mean, that's one thing I can say maybe recently, but I mean, more often than not, they hit out of the park. I mean, NES, okay, Virtual Boy was a bad step. Game Boy, one of the best things ever invented.
Yeah.
The DS, they had the DS Lite, which was like the smaller version, which wasn't really, it was kind of like a half step, but then they had the DS XL.
Right.
Which was like, that's one of my favorite things
ever.
Well,
yeah, I think people do like the bigger screens, to be honest. I mean, it was funny because we went through that phase of cell phones should be smaller and then, nope, they should be bigger again.
Yeah, it's weird how that kind of oscillates. Well, because you get to a point where it's like, well, it can't go any smaller. It's like,
I guess we got to make them bigger again.
I got to make them bigger again.
Well, I know for me, I like big screens because I'm like legally blind. Mm-hmm. In one eye and nearly so in the other. So I really like my huge LG screen and I can't do the iPhone screens.
No, they're too tiny.
Yeah.
Bigger's better, Nintendo, if you hear it. Bigger's better. Go big or go home. But like, I mean, like people made fun of that. Like remember the SNL where Will Ferrell was like, oh, now we have the iPod Micro? Or was it either Will Ferrell or
I was thinking Zoolander.
It was Will Ferrell or Fred Armisen
playing
Steve Jobs.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, we literally, he's like, here's the, you know, we've got the iPhone 5 and here's the 5S. And it's like smaller screen, higher resolution, mm-hmm. you know, stores like 2 gigabits of memory or, you know, whatever, right?
Uh-huh.
Or 2 gigs. And he's like, next up, we have the iPhone Micro, 2 centimeters across, 5 terabytes of information.
Oh,
and he's like, and then he like steps off stage, he listens, and he's like, oh, folks, we literally just got this in. It's the iPod Nano. Literally, it's on the head of my fingertip. You can't see it. 800 terabytes of storage. And it's like, it comes complete with microscope to see the screen. It's just kind of making fun of how the small things get. But like, I like the bigger screens too, honestly. Like,
yeah.
I
look at the Galaxy Note.
Yeah. I like that size. I don't like the exploding batteries, but I like the size. isn't that just the thing? You get the size that you want, but it just blows up too soon.
Oh yeah, totally.
All right, folks. So we are going to wrap up our Nintendo discussion. If you have any comments about Nintendo, what you think they do right, what you think they do wrong, we want to hear about it. Nintendo is a important thing in our lives as far as innovation.
Oh, yeah.
Artistic merit, technological progression, voice acting.
Yes.
I mean, they were the first games to really have voices, so...
Well, they were the first games, period, to be honest.
Did you want to add anything about Nintendo Fong?
No, just that my cousin was kind of a dick, and he wouldn't let me play on his Nintendo. And then, you know, he did once and said, like, it was for one of the challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, okay, but you have to lose so I can get more coins. So, of course, I didn't do that because I was also going to be a dick because he didn't let me play on his Nintendo. So I'm mad at Khan for not letting me play more Nintendo.
Play more Nintendo, nerd funnelers. Oh, you know what else?
Huh?
Nintendo, maybe a downside, maybe responsible for more increase in childhood fighting. Household property damage from throwing controllers. Tears. My mom used to say, like, I used to play Legend of Zelda and I couldn't figure out the puzzle or whatnot. I'd tear up and cry as a kid.
Aww.
I get frustrated. And she'd be like, Bobby, why do you play those games? You're always crying. And I'm like, because they're fun.
Oh, but.
And then I would throw the controller.
Yeah.
Which basically, if they can make aircraft and tanks out of Nintendo controllers,
yeah,
they would never be destroyed.
Those things are indestructible.
Indestructible.
Yeah.
Amazing. Nintendo, keep on doing what you're doing and stay true to yourself. I personally will roll through the rough seas with you,
totally,
for better or for worse, because I know you're going to come out on top. Thanks, Nintendo. From Nerd Funnel.